I wasn't certain whether he was trying to convince me or himself. Despite the release of curfew, we met no one on our way. The palace seemed to be devoid of life until we reached the vaulted front entrance. The king and queen stood waiting, surrounded by a handful of gray-clad, black-and-white-sashed attendants. Tristan sat on a bench near them, head in his hands. At the sound of my heels, he leapt abruptly to his feet, but I found I could not meet his gaze. Instead, I approached his parents and dropped into a deep curtsy. "Your Majesties." Turning in Tristan's direction, but keeping my eyes lowered, I added, "Your Highness."
"Let me see her."
I had forgotten about the Duchesse. The queen dutifully turned about, and her sapphire-bedecked sister peered at me, her orb of troll light dancing so close that my eyes watered from the brightness.
"See, Thibault, I told you she would clean up quite nicely."
The king said, looking over me much as my father did a cow at auction.
"Smells better, at least."
He flapped his hand in the queen's direction.
"Let's get this over with. I don't want to wait another month for a moon to find out if this will work."
With the queen at his side, the king swiftly departed through the enormous front entry, servants fluttering ahead of them. Mark had disappeared while I had been making my courtesies, and now only Tristan and I stood in the cold entrance. He watched me with those inhuman eyes, expression bland, perhaps even a bit bored.
"You look exceptionally colorful."
My cheeks and chest flushed a blotchy red. "I didn't choose the dress, my lord," I replied stiffly.
"I wasn't talking about the dress. I've only seen human hair that color in paintings, and I was certain the artists were being fanciful. It's more noticeable now that you've cleaned up."
He paused, shifting his weight from one leg to the other.
"And it's somewhat brighter in here. See the lamps?"
He broke off.
"Of course you see them, I just meant... your hair is very red."
Mortified, my skin flared so hot I thought it might burn clear off my bones. I fought the urge to wipe my sweaty palms on the gown and muttered, "I didn't get to choose the color of my hair, either." He opened his mouth, no doubt to add further insult to injury. But I shot him a dark look, and he wisely shut it again. A young troll stepped through the entrance. "Your Highness?" He held out a tray with two crystal glasses filled with a glowing blue liquid. Tristan examined them.
"Do you suppose it would be inappropriate?"
he asked the servant.
"For me to top them up a bit with some whiskey?"
The servant stared at him, expression horrified, tray trembling in his hand.
"I suppose you're right,"
Tristan said glumly, although the man hadn't spoken a word. He took the two glasses and handed me one of them.
"Cheers."
I took it and eyed the contents with suspicion. "What is it? Not some sort of poison, I hope."
"I call it liquid shackles. It has another name, but I prefer to use my own inventions. As to its nature, well..."
He shrugged.
"I wouldn't say it isn't harmful, but it certainly wouldn't kill you. At least, it shouldn't. We've never had a human drink any before."
"Why do you call it liquid shackles?" I asked, pursing my lips. I did not like the sound of that one bit.
"Because it is a clever metaphor," he replied, holding the glass up to examine it more closely.
I waited for him to explain further, but it was clear he had no intention of elaborating. "And if I refuse?" I asked. He cocked one eyebrow and gave me a dour look. "I suppose you'll just force it down my throat," I muttered.
"Certainly not," he said, lowering the glass. "It is always better to delegate nefarious tasks, you know, to keep one's reputation intact."
I scowled, but all my dark look garnered was a grin from him.
Keep in mind that I have to drink it too.
What does it taste like? I asked.
Having never been bonded before, I haven't the foggiest idea, but I expect quite vile.
He clinked his glass against mine.
Bottoms up.
He drowned the liquid in one mouthful. Resigned, I sipped mine carefully. It tasted a bit like honey, only sweeter. A slow but not unpleasant warmth swept down my throat and into my stomach, spreading out from there. I took another small sip and then another until the glass was drained. Quite lovely, really, I murmured. The room seemed brighter, and I swayed slowly from foot to foot, as though caught in some unheard rhythm. The pain of all my injuries faded away, and I felt languid, blissful.
Are you certain there was no liquor in that? I asked, my voice dreamy.
Quite.
Tristan's eyes had grown so dilated that only a thin rim of silver remained around them.
Though I see it has made you rather punch drunk.
You mean it hasn't affected you at all?
I expect I have a more resilient constitution.
The side of his throat fluttered with the rapidness of his pulse, belying his words. A strange urge to reach up and touch him filled me, if only to prove that he was in fact alive, not some vision my mind had conjured. I didn't remember moving, but suddenly my fingers brushed that very spot, his skin hot against mine. He shuddered beneath my touch, eyelids drifting shut. Then his hand shot up faster than anyone had the right to move and caught my wrist, gently pulling it away.
I think, Mademoiselle de Troyes, he said,
sucking in a ragged breath,
that you are not yourself.
He let go of me, my skin burning from his touch.
This all seems like a dream now, but like every dream, eventually, you must wake.
He raised a hand to brush back a tendril of hair that had fallen across my face. Careful, I thought, not to touch my skin. My lord? We both jumped, turning to look at the servant standing at the door. The moon rises. Tristan sighed.
And she waits on no one, not even me.
He offered his arm and I took it, feeling muscles flexed hard with tension beneath his coat. We descended down the marble steps and through the empty courtyard filled with glass trees and carved statues. Beyond the gates, light glowed. And as we passed under the iron portcullis and out into the city, I gasped. Thousands of trolls lined the path leading down to the river, and above each danced a glowing orb of troll light. I stepped on the hem of my dress and stumbled, clutching Tristan's arm for support, as my eyes scanned the crowd, massed on either side of us. They were young and old, some badly malformed, and some nearly as lovely to behold as the one holding my arm. The vast majority of them were wearing shades of gray, and pockets of those dressed in vibrant colors stood out like jewels in a bed of ash. One thing linked them all, though. Their expressions of desperate hope. Dozens of them dropped to their knees, fingers brushing the train of my dress as we passed, which should have been unnerving but wasn't. Not one of them said a word. There was only the sound of the waterfall, water that thundered as it hit the pool and echoed over and over again in a wild cacophony, piercing through the veil the strange liquid had cast over my mind. I shook my head, trying to clear my thoughts, but to no avail. My body shuddered as panic crept in, every instinct telling me to run. The king and queen waited with the rest of the troll nobility at the water's edge. Their eyes were not on us, but rather on a marble platform sitting in the middle of the river. At its center stood a glass altar, glittering not with the eerie light of the trolls, but one with which I was much more familiar. The moon, I whispered, and raised my eyes to the tiny hole in the rock ceiling far above.
The moon,
Tristan agreed.
It took 50 years after the fall of my ancestors to make that opening. And for those 50 years, no one could be properly bonded. Lucky bastards.
How sad, I murmured, my panic receding as I watched the beam of light grow in strength. If only I had wings, then I might fly up and through that hole to escape. My heart fluttered in my chest, and everything around me seemed unreal, as though I was walking in a dream.
Can you fly, my lord?
I asked, my voice sounding distant even in my own ears. Can your magic take you to the sky?
No,
he said, and I swore I heard regret.
Our magic can do a great many things, but not that.
I was distantly aware of passing through the ranks of trolls and of the heat beneath my feet as we swept up on a bridge of power forming magically ahead of us. It was transparent and faintly glowing. I'd never have dreamed it would hold our weight, but Tristan drew me resolutely across. My heels clicked against the surface as though it were made of glass. My eyes remained locked on the opening above us. Then abruptly, the edge of the moon appeared. My gasp was drowned by the collective murmurs of the thousands of trolls lining the banks of the river. Tristan moved to the far side of the altar from me.
Cecile,
he said, and I tore my eyes from the sight of the growing moon to meet his gaze.
Give me your hand.
Without hesitation, I reached across the glass surface and let him interlock his warm fingers with my own. His face betrayed no emotion, if he felt anything at all. Do trolls feel the same way a person does? I wondered. Does a troll know sadness, anger, or happiness? Can a troll love another troll? Or are they as cold inside as the rocks they were buried beneath? The dreamlike euphoria the drink had induced began to fade, and I cast my gaze skyward again, just as the lights of all the trolls winked out. Countless pairs of eyes watched silently as the moon grew full over Trollis. As it reached its zenith, a cool tingling swept over my knuckles, almost as though a damp paintbrush was tracing across my fingers. But I dared not look down. I was afraid if I looked down, my moon would disappear forever. Mist from the river dampened my skin, and my hair clung to the sides of my face, but the chill did not touch me. I could not say how much time had passed, but slowly, inch by inch, the moon crept across the opening in the rock until only a sliver was visible, and then nothing. Trollis fell into darkness, and the dream fractured, breaking into a million pieces of black glass. Emotions that were not mine bombarded me, and my knees buckled. I collapsed on the platform and pressed my forehead against the damp stone. I was no longer alone in my mind. Chapter 7. Cecile. Light flared, and I looked over my shoulder. Tristan knelt on the far side of the altar, one hand gripping the edge for support.
What have you done to me?
I choked out. There was something invading my thoughts. He was in my mind, his emotions, burning hotter and brighter than my own. His eyes met mine. Misery and shame built in the back of my skull until I half forgot my own fear.
Stop!
I screamed, my voice rising above the thunder of the river.
Get out!
Tristan looked away from me.
Did it work?
More troll lights blazed, and the king was next to me, his thick fingers digging into my wrist. He examined my hand, which now bore a mysterious silver lace pattern, and then let go of me, the corners of his mouth creeping up. His attention turned to Tristan, who was watching him much as a mouse does a snake.
Did you bond her?
Yes,
The word was flat, emotionless. Triumph flashed across the king's face.
Check the river road,
he bellowed, charging over the invisible bridge, his son forgotten.
What have you done to me?
I repeated.
What did he mean about you bonding me?
Tristan rested his forehead against the altar.
I didn't do anything more to you than you did to me.
What does that mean?
I asked precisely, with venom. Tristan looked up, a faint smile on his face.
Old magic. Neither troll nor human, although we've made use of it over the years. It bonded us, or linked our minds, if you prefer.
I would prefer the bond ended, I hissed, or better yet, never happened at all.
In this, we are of an accord, dearest wife. However, it is something we must both learn to live with.
For how long?
He grimaced and climbed to his feet.
Until one of us ceases to draw breath, one heart stills, one body is consigned to dust. Or, in less poetic terms, a bloody long time.
Leaving me to scramble to my own feet, he fixed his attention on the mob of trolls making their way to the far end of the valley.
Unless, of course, this doesn't work, he said softly and half to himself. Then we may not have long to wait at all.
If what doesn't work? I shouted, seizing hold of his arm. Quit talking in circles and explain what is going on and what any of it has to do with me.
Tristan ignored both tugging and words, his eyes fixed down the valley. His anticipation grew in my mind. Anticipation and fear. My own anxiety growing, I turned my attention to the horde of trolls standing in front of the wall of rock at the end of the city. We waited for what seemed like an eternity. Then abruptly, a collective groan of disappointment passed through the throng of trolls. Tristan did not echo them. His face was expressionless. But I sensed his relief and elation. Did it work? I asked, heartily wishing someone would explain what it was.
No,
Tristan said.
It didn't.
He tore his gaze away from the mass of trolls and took my arm.
We should probably hide you out of the way. He isn't going to be best pleased.
In the faint light, I could see that fights were beginning to break out in the crowd, but instead of fists, the trolls struck invisible blows with magic. Screams echoed through the cavern, and the air grew blisteringly hot.
Not that it will matter if they kill you first.
Tristan growled over the noise.
Establish curfew,
he shouted at the guards surrounding us.
Get the half-bloods back under control. We need to get out of here.
Tristan bolted across the invisible bridge, but when I tried to follow, my feet got tangled in the damp fabric of my skirt, slowing me down. I thought he would keep going and leave me to the crowd, but he was back in an instant. Snatching up the train of my skirt, he tore the thick fabric as easily as if it were paper and tossed it into the river. Then he grabbed hold of my wrist.
Run.
We stopped running once we reached the safety of the palace walls. Then Tristan dropped my arm and stepped ahead of me. I scurried after him through the maze of palace corridors with no small amount of difficulty. Even without the train, the skirts on my dress were heavy and prone to tangling up my feet. Pride kept me from asking him to slow down, and fear kept me from falling behind. It was made all the worse by Tristan's anxiety pressing hard in my skull. If he was afraid, what did that mean for me? Once I was thoroughly turned about, Tristan finally opened a door and pulled me into a room I recognized as the one where we had first met. He went immediately to the sideboard and, to my surprise, bypassed the decanter of wine and poured himself a glass of water instead. He guzzled the liquid down and poured another.
wine?
He asked. I'd prefer an explanation. He gave me a curious look.
I suppose there is no way you could know.
I shook my head. Passing a tired hand across his face, he nodded.
Fine. We are cursed, and by we, I mean trolls, not you and me. Although perhaps you might consider yourself so. Nearly 5 centuries ago, a human witch broke the mountain in two, burying Trollis in rock. Through magic, we were able to keep the city from being crushed, but suffice it to say, it took a significant length of time to dig a way out. Only for the trolls to discover that the witch had cursed them to the confines of Trollis for as long as she drew breath.
If your ancestors were half as irritating as you are, I can understand why.
Tristan glowered. This is no laughing matter, Cecile.
Why not? I said. You think everything else is?
We've known each other the space of 3 hours, and already she thinks she knows me.
Tristan muttered.
Do you want the rest of the story or not?
Please.
As I was saying, all of those trolls and their descendants have been trapped within the confines of the city for the past 500 years, while you humans carried on your merry way above. 3 weeks ago, my aunt, you may remember her, tiny woman practically inseparable from my mother, anyway, she has the gift of foresight. She foretold that when a prince of night bonded a daughter of the sun, the curse would be broken.
I'm the daughter of the sun, I said, my mind racing.
Far cleverer than you appear.
Tristan stuck his head out into the hallway and looked both ways before slamming the door shut. But the magic didn't work. You bonded me and the curse is still in place.
Correct again. Remind me to choose you for my team if we ever play charades. I like a stacked team.
But how does the curse work? I envisioned trolls turning into stone and crumbling to dust once they passed out of the darkness and into the sun. Tristan went to a drawer, removed something, and handed it to me. It was a small sphere of glass, and inside what appeared to be a highly detailed miniature version of the city of Trollis.
It is like being enclosed in an impenetrable glass bubble, he said. One that humans and animals and water can pass through, but which we cannot. As if pulling a mountain down on our heads wasn't enough,
he muttered, the last bit under his breath. The sound of boots coming down the hall caught both our attentions.
Hide in here.
Tristan pushed me into a small closet.
Be silent. Your life may depend on your discretion.
The lock clicked shut. Kneeling down, I peered through the keyhole and waited. I didn't wait long. The door slammed open, the king's bulk filling the frame as he passed through. Tristan's anxiety spiked, but to his credit, he didn't even flinch. I wished desperately that the bond would allow me to read his mind, but despite my best efforts, all I felt were his emotions. And even then, it was hard for me to decipher what was mine and what was his.
Where is she?
Never mind her, Tristan said. I've got her locked up safe.
Good, good,
his father replied, rubbing his hands together. He was breathing hard, and big drops of sweat beaded and ran down his fleshy jowls. I half expected his heart to blow out of his chest, and I didn't feel at all bad for wishing it would. Tristan poured his father a glass of wine.
From what I gather, all did not go as planned.
An understatement, if I had ever heard one. The king took a long swallow of the red liquid.
No.
Tristan hung his head.
You are disappointed, I expect.
Aren't you?
I've gone through a great deal today, and still the curse remains. How do you think I feel?
Tristan answered without hesitation. The king eyed his son with critical interest, considering his words. The glass drained, he motioned for Tristan to pour him another.
What do you propose?
I propose,
Tristan said, pouring the wine nearly to the rim,
that we bind her with oaths swearing her to secrecy and send her on her merry way.
Or we could just cut off her head. The dead, as they say, tell no tales.
My blood ran cold, and I had to clamp a hand over my mouth to keep from gasping aloud. Tristan's apprehension rose, but the shrug he gave his father told another story.
You could, although, given that I've just been bonded to her, the process would cause me no small amount of discomfort.
Attached to the little thing already,
the king smirked, the chair he settled into groaning beneath his weight.
She was brought here to serve a purpose,
Tristan scoffed.
What I am attached to is my life. You know the risks.
The king chortled at this, and his son laughed along with him. Tristan's words were surprisingly painful to me. Not that I had any reason to expect anything different. I'd been brought to Trollis to lift the curse, and I'd failed. Why should he care what happened to me now? But why would my death jeopardize his life?
As it turns out,
the king said, laughter cutting off abruptly.
She'll be neither leaving nor dying.
Tristan froze, and this time the shock on his face matched that in his mind.
Pardon?
Your aunt believes it's premature for me to give up on her fulfilling the prophecy. She proposes we keep her around for a while longer, and that you should treat her as any man does his wife. We need to give the people some form of hope, or who knows what sort of trouble they'll cause.
Tristan blanched.
You can't be serious.
The king raised one eyebrow.
She's human.
I noticed.
The king took another mouthful of wine, leaving a red stain on his upper lip.
You want me to?
Yes. You've bonded her, and now you shall bed her. I can't say I relish the idea of a bunch of half-bloods running about the royal nursery, but quite frankly, I'd breed you to a sheep, if that is what it took to break the witch's blasted malediction. You're 17 years old, time to man up.
I don't care for mutton.
Tristan crossed his arms.
It's too tough.
Well then, count your lucky stars that your dear Cecile isn't a sheep,
the king said, climbing to his feet.
I'm certain you'll find her markedly more tender.
I pressed back against the closet, bile rising in my throat. They were discussing me as though I had no more value than a side of meat, and my mind refused to delve any further into what else they were discussing.
This isn't a debate, Tristan. This is an order. Do you understand?
Yes, sir,
Tristan said, plainly out of glib retorts. His father patted him on the shoulder.
It will be worth the cost once you are outside in the sun. Just imagine, eventually you'll rule lands wider than the eyes can see.
Who wouldn't want that?
The king nodded, satisfied.
Good lad.
As the door shut behind him, I let out a huge gust of breath that I hadn't noticed I'd been holding. Tristan? I whispered. Get me out of here. He didn't move from where he sat, on the arm of a chair. Tristan! He looked up, his troll light casting eerie shadows on his face.
I'll send someone to let you out,
he said.
I need to.
He got to his feet, and ignoring my pleas, left the room. The knot of emotion residing in my mind did not depart with him. Resting my head against the closet door, I attempted to thrust aside my own feelings, to better focus on his, which was an exercise of frustration. He was unhappy, that much I could say. But it was hard to pick specifics out of the seething stew of emotion. And what good was knowing specifics anyway? What good was knowing how he felt? What possible advantage could such a connection give me? Tired, sore, and more than a little scared, I settled on the floor. My skirts rustled as I arranged them to make myself comfortable. I could probably have picked the lock, but there seemed no point. The closet was darker than the darkest of nights, and the room no better. I could not escape without light, and that would be hard to come by in this place. I needed to get away. Any hope the trolls would let me go had been dashed by the conversation I had just overheard. The king intended to keep me in Trollis indefinitely, and he had expectations of what I would do while I was here. At best, I was an instrument for breaking a curse, and at worst, a broodmare for what they called half-bloods. The very idea made me shiver. It wasn't Tristan who repulsed me, despite the fact he wasn't human. He was handsome. And if I were being honest with myself, the strange drink they'd given me had drawn out stirrings of desire I would gladly do without. Clearly the same had not occurred for him. To him, I was little better than a sheep. And the idea of spending the rest of my life with someone who was disgusted by me made me cringe. Because I would never be able to escape it. Even standing on far sides of the city, I would still be able to feel it. I leaned my head against the shelves, exhaustion starting to take hold of me. Only as I started to drift off to sleep did it occur to me, if the trolls had been trying to break the curse for 500 years, why had Tristan been so happy when we failed?
Chapter 8. Tristan. Bloody stones in sky, Mark, I hissed as he walked through the door. Where have you been? I glanced at the clock on the wall. I've been waiting a good hour for you. So sorry, cousin, he replied, tossing his cloak in the corner and pouring himself a drink. I am at your beck and call, but it did take a bit of time to reestablish curfew. I pushed aside my books and leaned my elbows on the table, only now noticing the drying blood on Mark's black sleeve. Casualties? 12 dead, all minors except for one street worker, but I believe he got caught in the crossfire, such as it was. I grimaced. Perpetrators? Mark shrugged. Hard to prove, but it sounds like guild members. They did not report any injuries. They wouldn't. I rubbed my temples, trying to push aside the knot of emotion residing in the back of my skull that most decidedly did not belong to me. The emotions belonging to the girl, Cecile. Do we know who instigated? I asked. Mark's expression was grim and told me all I needed to know. Sliding my arms across the table, I rested my forehead against the smooth surface and then banged it against the wood twice for good measure. I can't think, I said. Can you deal with it until I have more time? I suppose. Mark sat down in a chair across from me and said nothing else, which allowed me to turn my attention back to the girl. She was fading. I straightened abruptly. It's diminishing. The bond, it's fading away. The triumphant grin on my face vanished at the sight of Mark's slowly shaking head. She's sleeping. You'll notice her a lot less when she's asleep, unless she dreams. That can get interesting. I motioned for him to fill my glass. It isn't interesting at all, I said. It's a problem. She's a problem. One that needs dealing with. Mark's face darkened. Cecile, he said, emphasizing her name, isn't a problem. She's an innocent girl who has been dragged into this situation entirely against her will. Your father had her violently kidnapped, dragged through the labyrinth, and then bonded to a troll, using a magic that I am certain she didn't know existed. She is not our problem. We are hers. Leaning back in my chair, I watched my orb of light circling above us. You make a valid point. The poor girl is probably terrified, Mark added. How could she not be? Well, she isn't, I said. What she is blasted inquisitive. I'd rather the fear. Fear doesn't think. It just reacts. Mark snorted. Tristan, the bond changes everything, he said. Whether you like her or not, keeping her safe will become your ultimate priority. The last thing you are going to want is for her to be afraid, especially of you. He took a sip of wine, watching my face. For the rest of your lives, you will feel what the other is feeling every waking moment, sometimes in your dreams. I covered my eyes with a hand, a heavy feeling in my chest. I was the one that was afraid. Where did you leave her? Mark asked. Is she safe? She's safe enough, I said, hesitating for a moment before adding. She's locked in the closet of my sitting room. Mark's face twisted, which for him was saying something. Are you quite serious? It was the only place I could hide her. I quickly explained the conversation I'd had with my father. And you left her there? After she had to listen to that? I nodded, starting to feel somewhat ashamed. Mark got to his feet, left the room, and was back moments later. I sent a message to Elise. She'll take care of it. I bit my lip hard, considering all my options, none of which were good. Is it always going to be this invasive? I finally asked, realizing how strange my lack of knowledge was about something so common to my people. A mystery that was kept a secret by those who had experienced it. Explain it to me. Mark sighed. You'll get used to it. But in your case, that might not be such a good thing. In a few days, you will only notice extreme emotions. Fear, happiness, anger, sadness, or pain. And physical distance? I had noticed walking over here that I could feel the distance, like a lengthening cord, growing between us. Only if it changes dramatically, or if you concentrate. He smiled. You'll always be able to find her. And she will be able to find me, I suppose? I drained my glass. And therein lies the crux of our problem. I held up a hand to keep him from interrupting. It is not that I know what she feels. It's that she feels what I feel. She's going to know when I'm being the deceitful, manipulative troll that I am. If she betrays that information for an instant, it could be my undoing. Mark opened his mouth to speak, then closed it again and nodded. I could feel the pressure in the room building as my magic responded to my frustration, the air growing hotter by the second. So what you're telling me is, I shouted, my words directed more at myself than my cousin, that on top of controlling every word I say, every relationship I have, every twitch, tick, and gesture that I make, that I must now control how I feel? I slammed my fists down on the table, the wood groaning beneath the impact. No, Tristan, Mark said, ignoring my anger. You're the one who thinks you can control every aspect of your life, but you're wrong. You can't control this. You'll have to find another way. What other way? I demanded. Win her over, he said. Make her your ally. You're bonded. Be what you are supposed to be to each other. The world spun around me, and I grabbed the edge of the table for support, feeling my aunt's prophecy driving me towards what seemed like an inevitable and unavoidable goal. No, I said under my breath. I'll do what it takes, but it won't be that. The cost is far too high.
Chapter 9. Cecile. If Zoe and Elise were surprised to find me locked in a closet, they didn't say so. My hands in theirs,
They led me to an adjoining room, and I immediately fixated on the large four-poster bed dominating the space. Under other circumstances, its thick blankets and mounds of pillows might have been inviting. Tonight, they held all the appeal of a torturer's rack. The maids removed my gown and jewels, and at my request, clasped my mother's necklace back around my neck. They proceeded to dress me in a white lace nightgown and a thick velvet wrap.
"We'll bring your breakfast in the morning,"
Elise said, then motioned for her sister to leave. Their troll lights followed along behind them, the room already growing dim.
"Wait," I called out. "I have no light."
Zoe hurried back over to me.
"Our mother had this problem when she was alive," she said. "I remember my father leaving lights about our home for her."
"Your father?" I asked tentatively. "Did he care for your mother?" Her eyes widened.
"Of course he did, my lady. Very much so. They were not bonded, though. It was forbidden."
Her gaze flickered down to the silver marks on my hand.
"Perhaps that will change now."
A second ball of light appeared next to us.
"I'll leave this with you, my lady, though I'm not certain how long it will last,"
she added, cheeks flushing faintly.
"My magic has a tendency to wander. I'm sure His Highness will think of a better solution. He is exceedingly clever about such things."
Alone, with only Zoe's diminishing ball of light for company, I wandered through Tristan's cluttered room. Not an inch of wall space had been left bare, and I examined the assorted collection of artwork, tapestries, and maps in an attempt to find insight into the mind of the creature I'd just married. There were landscapes, seascapes, and cityscapes I recognized as Trianon. He had a great many paintings of men on horseback, galloping after foxes, boars, and deer. Unlike the other rooms in the palace, no prevailing theme dominated. Only a wild and random representation of the world outside of Trollis. The normal, unmagical Isle of Light. A mantle took up one wall, and I saw with amusement that he'd nailed a painting of burning logs in the empty space where a real fire ought to have been. A small sitting area surrounded the fireplace, reminding me for a moment of home. But only briefly. This room was cold, unfamiliar, and empty, which our farmhouse never was. I settled down in one of the chairs, pulling my cold feet underneath me, and began to sort through the large stack of books on the table. They were novels, adventures of pirates on the high seas, tales of knights slaying dragons, mysteries set in the underworld of cities on the continent. The door opened, and I leapt to my feet.
"I see you've made yourself comfortable,"
Tristan said, tossing his hat on the desk.
"No thanks to you, sir,"
I replied, wrapping my arms tightly around my body. "You left me locked in a closet."
"And you came to no harm, which leads me to believe the closet might be a good place to keep you in the future."
"You wouldn't dare," I gasped.
"I've warned you about expectations before, Cecile,"
he said, pulling off his coat and draping it on the back of a chair.
"Begone."
He swiped at Zoe's fading ball of light and it winked out.
"I heard everything you two said. I know your plans for me."
I watched him cross the room towards me, not realizing I was backing up until my shoulders hit the wall. He kept walking until we were only inches apart. The top of my head barely came up to his chest, and the outlines of muscle were visible through his shirt.
"Good," he said. "Saves me from trying to explain what is expected of you."
Terror flooded me. If I screamed, no one would come to my rescue. He could do whatever he wanted to me, and no one would question him. Every instinct told me to grovel and beg for mercy beneath the weight of his determination, but my knees didn't buckle. I met his piercing metallic gaze, knowing that a defiant expression would mean little when he felt my terror as though it were his own. His face twisted in disgust. That matched the emotion pounding in the back of my head.
"You can take the bed,"
he said, spinning away from me.
"I'll have none of this."
Crossing the room, he threw himself down on a chaise and pulled off his boots. I stood in silence as he sorted through a stack of books, opened one, and stared at the first page longer than it would take to read. With a sigh, he tossed it back on the pile, and without looking at me even once, said,
"Good night."
His troll light winked out, leaving me standing in absolute blackness. One hand pressed against the wall, I waited for my eyes to adjust to the darkness so I might make my way over to the bed. But it never happened. Swallowing hard, I rubbed my hands briskly over my arms, trying to ward off tears as much as the cold. "He'll hear you if you cry," I thought. Bad enough that he knows what I feel without giving him the satisfaction of hearing me break. But it was hard not to do. Tristan's melancholy magnified my own, and my weary and aching shoulders slumped beneath the burden. This was not how my marriage was supposed to happen. A drop of blood rose on my lip as I bit it in an attempt to force away visions of what might have been. Gran's dress, my friends and family feasting on a warm summer's day. A young man from a good family who loved me as fiercely as the sun shone at noon. My wedding night. A fat tear ran down my cheek before I could wipe it away. The older girls living in the hollow often whispered about what passed between two people who'd just been wed, and I'd wanted those things. But I also knew enough to recognize that I'd been lucky tonight. Taking a couple of tentative steps in the direction of the bed, I gained confidence walking blind and promptly collided with a table. The furniture and I both went down with a thump, accompanied by the sound of smashing glass.
"Stones and sky, girl," Tristan snapped. "Have you not made things hard enough without destroying everything I own?"
"I can't see," I shouted back at him, trying to climb to my feet and banging my head against another table in the process. "Ouch!" A ball of light appeared above me as I rubbed the growing lump on my skull. I was starting to get quite the collection.
"Are you all right?"
"Fine," I snapped, getting up.
"Watch out for the—"
I winced as a sharp pain lanced into my heel.
"Glass,"
Tristan finished. And sympathy filled his corner of my mind. I hopped on one leg towards the bed, making it halfway before warm ropes of power lifted me up and deposited me on the covers. "I didn't need help," I grumbled, pulling on my ankle in a vain attempt to examine the bottom of my foot.
"Sorry."
He came closer.
"I'd forgotten you had no light."
The way he spoke made me feel like I lacked something as fundamental as a heart or a brain.
"Here."
He handed me the wine glass I'd brought in with me. As I touched the stem, the bowl lit up with bright silver light.
"It will glow at your touch and,"
he took it again,
"dim when set down."
I snatched the precious item from him like a greedy child.
"You're welcome,"
he said, and I flushed at my rudeness.
"Let me have a look at your foot."
With one hand, he took hold of my ankle, his brow furrowing as he examined the shard embedded in my heel. I clutched my glowing wine glass and held my breath.
"Ready?"
He met my gaze. I gave a quick nod, hoping my feet didn't smell. A sharp sting, and the pink-tinged glass floated through the air to drop on the bedside table. "Don't you ever do anything with your hands?" I asked. "I mean, without magic." A ghost of a smile touched his lips, and he pulled a handkerchief out of his pocket, wrapping the silk around my foot.
sometimes. I grew aware of the warmth of his said hands on my ankle and jerked out of his grip. Avoiding his gaze, I pulled up the covers and carefully set my glass on the table, watching its light dim. He did not light another to replace it, and soon we were surrounded by darkness once again.
Cécile?
Yes? He hesitated, the sound of him swallowing loud against the silence.
In the morning, they'll ask. They'll want to know if we...
I listened to him breathing, and I waited.
I'll need you to lie convincingly, or I'm afraid there will be consequences for both of us.
If you're so concerned about my ability to tell tall tales, why don't you do it? I snapped. I felt his irritation mount.
Because I can't.
What do you mean you can't? I grabbed hold of my wine glass so I could see him.
Because I can't tell a lie. No troll can tell a lie.
He pointed to a cushion.
I couldn't so much as claim this cushion was any color other than red.
My brow furrowed. I don't believe you.
Of all the things that you have discovered today, this is what you choose to disbelieve.
He passed a weary hand over his face.
It doesn't matter if you believe me or not. Lie about it. If you don't, and my father discovers I have disobeyed him in this, we will both suffer for it.
Afraid of your father? I asked.
I'm not.
He started, then broke off, silent for several deafening moments.
I will take his punishment before I compromise my standards in this. Of that, you can rest assured.
I set my glass on the table, extinguishing the light. My cheeks burned, and I pulled the covers up higher, hoping he couldn't see in the dark. Knowing he would not willingly force himself upon me was a relief. But there was also a part of me stung by his words. I'd never been the girl the boys fought to dance with at festivals. That was my sister, with her golden hair and sunny disposition. But neither had anyone been so blunt as to tell me I did not meet their standards. Fine, I finally mumbled. I listened to him walk slowly across the dark room and settle back down on the chaise, shifting back and forth several times before he lay still. His emotions were as confusing as those swirling through me. I searched for my anger, but it had abandoned me when needed most. My legs tucked close to my stomach, I stared at the blackness where my wine glass stood, my precious source of light. Thank you, I whispered, and sensed him relax and slowly drift off to sleep. Let him think I was grateful for him giving me light, granting me respite, or even for bandaging my foot. He could think anything he liked, but only I knew the true reason for the hope rising in my heart. I smiled into the darkness. He had given me the first thing I needed to escape. Chapter 10. Cécile.
Where are all my clothes?
I jerked awake, knocking my elbow against the headboard. Any hopes of it all being a dream were dashed by the sight of Tristan, his arms full of colorful silk dresses, storming about the room. Both my maids and a gray-clad manservant stood in a row, their heads lowered. Covers tucked up around my shoulders, I watched Tristan dash into the closet and emerge with another armload of dresses. He threw them in a pile on the floor.
Why is my closet full of dresses?
Are they mine? I asked with interest. Silver eyes fixed on me.
Well, they certainly are not mine, unless you imagine that I dress up in ladies' clothing and prance about the palace when the mood strikes me.
A giggle slipped out of Elise, which she promptly smothered with a hand over her mouth.
You consider this a laughing matter?
Tristan glowered at the girl.
Sorry, my lord.
she said.
Your clothes are in the other closet.
Why?
Her Grace thought the larger closet more appropriate for her ladyship's gowns, my lord.
She did she?
He stormed back into the closet, returning with another armload.
That's the last of them.
Are you wrinkling my dresses? I said.
Zoe and Elise will waste their entire day pressing them.
And then they can hang them somewhere else, he snapped.
You're creating an enormous amount of unnecessary work.
It is the rule of the aristocracy to create work, he said, kicking the pile of gowns. Necessary or otherwise. Without us, who knows what would happen to productivity?
I rolled my eyes and climbed out of bed. Catching the corner of a sheet, I set to making the bed.
What are you doing?
Tristan shouted. What does it look like I'm doing?
Ladies do not make their own beds. It shows initiative, which is broadly considered most unladylike.
My temper rising, I whirled about. Dear me, I shouted. I must have forgotten that my new purpose in life is to create work. Jerking all the blankets off the bed, I threw them on the floor. The pillows followed next, and I proceeded to run around the room, taking all the cushions off of the chairs and tossing them about the room. The last I deliberately aimed at Tristan's head. It froze midair.
You are making quite the mess of my room.
Our room, I shouted back. What is going on here? The queen strode into the room, but it was her sister who had spoken. The queen turned, as though out of habit, so that her sister was facing us.
Explain to me why she must stay in my rooms,
Tristan demanded.
Surely we have the space to put her somewhere else.
She is your wife, Tristan. Keeping her in here with you will help remind you of your duties.
I am unlikely to forget them,
Tristan replied acidly,
and I would be willing to bet a great deal of gold that most men require only 5, perhaps 10 minutes maximum to conduct their duties. Any longer's the business of romantics, and I dare say, I haven't given you a reason to believe I have a single romantic bone in my body.
She'll stay until I say otherwise, young man,
the Duchesse barked, crossing her arms.
And you'll quit acting like a spoiled brat and start acting like a man.
I'll act how I please.
I smiled as I watched him storm out of the room. Only a heartbeat later, I realized his satisfaction mirrored my own, which made no sense at all. I took in the room, which looked much as if a hurricane had passed through. In hindsight, it occurred to me that throughout his apparent tantrum, I'd never felt a bit of anger from him. An act, then. But to what purpose? The Duchesse turned her attention to me.
Well, is it done?
Lie.
Yes,
I mumbled, not having to fake my mortification.
Good. You humans are as fertile as rabbits. Perhaps a child is the key.
Magic jerked my chin up.
They've predicted a large number of events in my day, girl, she said. They've never been wrong before. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I nodded, although I didn't. Who were they? Wasn't it the Duchesse who predicted the future?
Good. Now, why don't you get dressed and go into the city? Buy yourself something pretty.
Is it safe, Your Grace? Elise
asked.
The riots.
Perfectly safe. The Duchesse snapped. The king has decreed that anyone who harms her will suffer the most extreme of punishments. The law secures her well-being. Besides, Presenting her as a princess will demonstrate our continued faith in the accuracy of the prophecy. Help keep the mob quiet for a time.
I haven't got any coin, I mumbled.
Nor did I think a new